Just Work, Get Shit Done Fast and Fair by Kim Scott. Read for you by Gabra Zachman. Difference must be not merely tolerated, but seen as a fund of necessary polarities between which our creativity can spark. Only then does the necessity for interdependency become unthreatening. Audre Lorde. Introduction. We can't fix problems we refuse to notice. I never wanted to think of myself as a victim, a person harmed by injustice at work. Even less did I want to think of myself as a perpetrator, a person who causes harm or contributes to injustice. And so I didn't think about it. I marched through my career ignoring the unfair disadvantages and advantages I had, the ways I was automatically underestimated and overestimated. If you'd asked me 5 years ago whether being a white woman had an impact on my work, I would have shrugged and said, "Not really." It's hard for the author of Radical Candor to admit, but I was in denial. I worked in Memphis, Boston, New York, Silicon Valley, Paris, Moscow, Jerusalem, Pristina, and elsewhere. I have managed teams that span the globe, from Japan to China to Australia to India to Ireland to Brazil to Mexico. But wherever you go, there you are. I was always a woman, and there was always gender injustice everywhere. I also had a host of privileges that made my life easier, usually in ways I didn't like to think about. I was always white, and there was always racial injustice everywhere. I was never poor, and there is always economic injustice everywhere. I was always straight, and there is always homophobia everywhere. To expose the depths of my refusal to recognize reality, let me tell you about my first job after college. This happened in 1991. I was 23 years old, and I'd taken a job working for a private equity firm. It all started with an anecdote. Robert, not his real name, the CEO of the firm, had a story he loved to tell about going to the Bolshoi Ballet with some of our company's Soviet partners. The first time, but certainly not the last, I heard the story was at the end of a strategy meeting. Here's how Robert told it. "So, the ballet is finally over, and Vladimir leans over and whispers, 'Robert, do you like ballerinas?' Robert mimicked how he felt taken aback by the question and said, 'Sure. But Robert,' the Russian factory director hissed, 'which ballerina?' Robert looked around at his audience, three young men and me, with raised eyebrows. 'He was offering to deliver the ballerina of my choice to my hotel room.' The men laughed, half in admiration and half in disbelief. But I felt sick to my stomach. How could they possibly think this was funny? 'Did you take him up on his offer?' one of the young men asked. 'Do you think he could really deliver?'" Here, Robert glanced in my direction and then turned the full force of his self-righteous glare on the young man. "No, of course not. I am not that sort of person. But yes, I think he could have delivered." The young men were impressed. I was horrified. Robert seemed to think he'd done enough by not availing himself of the offer. Robert is no hero in this story, but I do know he and the other men on my team shared my belief that human trafficking was immoral. Yet when we were working with a partner who claimed it was his right to procure for Robert any dancer he wanted, nobody said a damn word, including me. Robert turned the whole thing into a funny anecdote, as if laughing at the situation made the whole thing not quite real. Denial. Not long afterward, I learned that I was being paid significantly less than the market salary for my role. A friend of mine in a similar job told me she was being paid 4 times more than me. My friend explained her salary was the market rate, what the guys got paid. When I told my boss, Thomas, this, he exclaimed, "She must be sleeping with her boss." That was BS, and I said so. When I asked Thomas for a raise, he acted as though I were putting him in an unreasonably difficult position with Robert, the CEO. A legend in our business, Robert was known equally for his success as a contrarian investor and his explosive personality. I suspected that Thomas didn't think I'd talk to Robert myself. At the first opportunity, I asked Robert for a meeting and soon found myself facing him in a conference room. He was seated comfortably in an armchair. Something about his big belly and unruly white hair.